Thank you, Lars. I didn't understand a word of that, but I'm sure it was all very inspiring and very encouraging. Hello, everyone. I would like to greet all of you with a greeting. Om Shanti. Om means I am, and Shanti means peace. And, well, first of all, I'm very happy to see all of you here on a cold, wet summer evening. The weather in England is exactly like this. And I know that to give up a couple of hours of your time is very precious in today's world. And I know that, if nothing else, just being in the company here, in the atmosphere here, with others who are interested in the same things as you are, I'm sure you will take something special away for yourself. I'm actually curious to know, what was it that made you come tonight? Was it that you wanted to find out about meditation? Or was it the subject related to freedom? Who came to learn meditation? Or find out about meditation? Can you raise your hand for me? Some. Who came to find out about freedom? Wow. Okay. Freedom is something that's very precious for all of us. And I feel that up until now, there's been a little bit of a misunderstanding about what we perceive freedom to be. But since freedom and meditation go together, and we're going to intersperse this evening with meditation, what I would like to do is start with just a few minutes of meditation. Because the kind of meditation that we do here is very simple. Doesn't involve chanting, mantras, physical exercises, but just learning the power of our own thoughts, first of all. And then learning to use our thoughts in the right way. So just for 2 minutes, what I would like to do is to give you some thoughts to bring you here, in this room, with these people, and here this evening. Sit comfortably, relax, so that you're not distracted by the discomfort of your body. You don't have to go through any hardships in order to experience meditation. It really is something that's intrinsic, and you all do it. I know you do it. Anything that you give focus attention to, anything that you concentrate for, is a form of meditation. Simply that. So don't say you can't do it. You may not be able to concentrate on what we're talking about tonight, but that doesn't mean that you can't meditate. We all do it, but sometimes we do it on the wrong things. And so, comfortably, so that you're sitting relaxed, eyes open, don't close your eyes. Unless you have a specific method that you want to continue with. Because meditation is very natural. Peace, quiet, love, happiness, freedom is your nature. You are that. You don't have to imagine it. You don't have to take it from somewhere else. It's inside of you. So first, let's just start from there. Limitation of our thoughts, limitation of our thinking is perhaps the biggest trap that we find ourselves in. Where do thoughts come from? We usually think that although thoughts happen inside my mind, inside myself, we usually think that thoughts come from outside. They come because we think. They come because certain people say certain things to us. They come because certain situations occur in front of us that we hadn't anticipated. They come because of the places that we live in, the culture that we live in, or the upbringing that we have had. This is what we feel. This is what we think about having thoughts. To some degree, it's true, but mostly it is an illusion. What I think inside, what I feel inside, is something that is entirely and completely up to me. I heard the sentence that Lars mentioned in English, that life is about choices. Everything we do, everything we think, everything we say is actually a choice. And consciously or unconsciously, we make the choice. When we realize that my own thoughts are also my choice, I begin to take responsibility of my thoughts. Thoughts come from persistent perceptions and ideas, or beliefs that I can do something or I can't do something comes from persistent thinking. My thinking comes from my own experiences of the past. My thinking happens as a result of how I perceive life to be. I think because I've seen something. First of all, my thoughts are the seed to everything that I do. My thoughts are the seed to everything I have become today. And when I realize, when I understand this, what happens when you sow a seed in your garden of a plant or a tree? You sow the seeds, you water the seed starts to germinate with the light, when it has the right climate, when it has the water, and then having germinated in time, the tree grows and it bears fruits. And my life is like a tree of thoughts that have been planted over a long, long period of time. And then those thoughts have been watered, or those seeds of thoughts have been watered through awareness of those, through acting on those thoughts. And those thoughts become stronger and stronger part of my life. And then what do I say? Well, this is how I am. A very interesting example of this is, I don't know if people here smoke a lot. Were people born with cigarettes in their mouth, do you think? People are born with a cigarette in their mouth? Mm-mm. But when we start smoking and it becomes a habit, what do we say? I can't do it. I can't live without it. I need it. I have to have it. Others will identify with certain aspects of my habit and they'll say, well, you know her who does this and who does that and who does the other. People identify with my habits, identify me with my habits. And so I see people smoking around me. I just see it and I think, interesting exercise. Looks like fun. So I have a cigarette. When I first have the thought, first it was just a thought actually. I have a thought, maybe I should have a cigarette. You're in the company, you are in the company of people who are smoking. The atmosphere is quite smoky too, and you're feeling a bit like, you know, need a bit of excitement in life. So you first just have a thought of smoking. It's just a thought. And you know that, well, it's not a good idea to smoke really. Why do I need to smoke anyway? But the mind persists. Well, it's just one. It's not a big deal. I'm not going to be addicted to it if I just have the first one. So you have a cigarette. It's just the first experience. So you have a cigarette. And now you have an experience. Doesn't matter, good or bad. It's irrelevant. The fact is that you have recorded an experience. It might be 6 months later, might be a year later. Perhaps you're feeling in the same mood. Perhaps you're in the same company. Perhaps you're in the same atmosphere. And you have a thought again. Because you've experienced it. You know what it's like. And you know you felt something, whatever it was. And so you have another cigarette. It's only a second one. And even the second time, your intellect said, don't do it. It's not such a good idea to have a cigarette because it's bad for you. It's bad for your lungs. But the mind, again, having had an experience, it persists its thoughts. So you have a cigarette again. Then the first experience is now reinforced. The experiences become stronger. Then it happens again. And it happens again, and it happens again. The time period might be less, but it still happens. And you give in to your thoughts every time it happens. And what do you find yourself in? A habit. You've now created a habit of smoking, and you don't even think anymore. You just see it and off you go. You have a cigarette. And you say you can't do without it. You have to have it. 20 cigarettes a day, 30 cigarettes a day. You've formed yourself a habit. Others will see you with that habit and identify you with that habit. And then you say, I want to be free. I don't want this. I want to be free, but I can't. And think about it on every level. Really, this is a very gross example that I'm giving because it's easy to understand this example. But we do that on so many different levels of life, different aspects of life we find ourselves in, and we become subservient to our own habits. And then we can't be free. And yet, my thoughts are my own creation. They're not anybody else's creation. My thoughts form my beliefs. And my beliefs will form my attitude. My beliefs will form my vision. My beliefs will actually create my behaviors. And really, it's a very simple aspect, yet my thoughts have created my whole personality, my whole world. And the amazing thing about thoughts is that thoughts are like a living energy. It has a life. And again, you've experienced that yourself. You have thoughts, and thoughts come back to you in different ways. What are the aspects that we find ourselves wanting to be free from? We are wanting to be free sometimes from situations, sometimes people, sometimes our own personality even. And realizing the power of my thoughts means that I realize that I can do whatever I want. The biggest ties, if you like, the biggest bond that we have is people. And the funny thing is that when we start our interactions with each other, we started with the best of intentions. We started with wanting to share, wanting to give, wanting to receive. And it wasn't meant to be a situation whereby I become dependent and subservient to someone else. And dependencies are the aspects that we want to be free from. And these dependencies, because they limit me. Dependencies on people limit my own behaviors, my own attitude. It's like people occupy my mind. People occupy my thoughts and my feelings and my time. And because of that, I find myself in a cage that I want to be so free from. And yet I have created a need as well. And this kind of a need is a need that I actually know deep inside that I don't really have, I don't really want. The biggest aspect of human life is the aspect related to self-realization. We want to be such that we can be independent. We can learn to interact with each other with so much compassion, so much give and take, that we also actually want to be free as well. Relationships and interactions with others are important aspects of life. In fact, it's human nature. But once we become trapped, it seems like an impossible exercise, if you like, to be free and to be myself. But firstly, I need to understand who I am. I need to understand what I am. In India, we have a saying that you come alone and you go alone. Nobody came with anybody. And the only thing that you carry with yourself is the quality of your actions, the quality of your behavior and life that you create with yourself. We have a belief that nobody belongs to me and I don't belong to anyone. I am alone. But alone doesn't mean lonely. Loneliness only comes in when I have created this kind, when I have become needy in this way. But to become aware of the self means to become aware of the beauty, the love, the peace, the happiness, and purity that lies inside the soul, inside the spirit. And these are my intrinsic qualities. This is who I am. This is what I am. It's only when I have lost sight of this within myself that I seek this from others. And you will find that you will either become drawn to someone because they have something that you want, and more in terms of personality than anything else. You will become drawn to an aspect of their personality that you lack within your own self. And it's like being with that person brings out that quality within you. And so we interact with each other because of that. But another side of that also is that, you know, when we push people out of our lives, it's also because they show us something about ourselves, something that we don't like about ourselves. And so it's easier to push the person out because they're showing me something about myself, than to look at myself and say, I need to change this. I need to do something about it. It's very interesting. And so self-realization means to know that I am entirely and completely a positive being. Actually, dare I even say, perfect being. What I would like to do now is have again a few minutes of meditation, guided meditation, to go into the positive aspects of the self, to actually experience them through the creation of my own thoughts. What I'm doing actually is just tapping into what lies inside myself. I'm cutting away the layers and layers of negative experiences that I have accumulated within myself over a long period of time. And it's not bad. Such has been life. Nobody is to be blamed. No one outside of me is to be blamed. And I'm not to be blamed. It's just that there's been a great deal of ignorance and lack of understanding about myself. And so, to be spiritually awakened means to have understanding, knowledge, information that I can use, first of all, which then, after practice and use of it in my life, turns into wisdom. So let's just stop for a few moments. And having stopped, let's just go into the awareness of the self as a spiritual being, a soul, a living, thinking, conscient energy. Because this frees me from all the limitations. You know, our physical world is very limited. You can perceive it whilst you see it. You can perceive it whilst you feel it. But if you don't do that, then, or you can hear it, then you can perceive it. But otherwise, we don't understand our physical world. But yet, that there is another realm of our feelings, another realm of light, another realm of understanding, another realm of love. It has no words. When you experience love, truly experience love, I feel that it has no external expression. You come into the presence of love and you know that there is love. You don't need to be told you are loved, or you don't need to tell the other person that you love them. You feel warmth, you feel acceptance, you feel protected, you feel safe, and you feel the presence of love. But nowadays, because we've come so far away from that experience of love, that we need external expressions of love. We need to hear that we're loved. We need to be told that we're loved. We need to tell that we're loved. Sometimes even to convince ourselves that we have love. And to convince the other person that we have love. But when there is true love, there is no physical expression. You don't need words. You come into the presence and you feel it. That's the exploration that we want. And that's the method of communication that we need to learn with each other so that we are able to fulfill ourselves through that, then the external. So let's stop for a few moments. Go inside, sit comfortably again, but alert. It's important to sit alert. Meditation is not just relaxation so that you fall asleep, but meditation is a very energizing experience, a state of alertness. and an awakening that stimulates the mind and the intellect. I see myself on the screen of my mind. As a being of light, a sparkling, shining light. Radiating light. And first of all, I feel light through my entire physical body too, because I know that I am light. I free myself from all perceptions of the limitations of the physical, and I become the thought energy that I am. I am the star at the center of my forehead. And in this awareness, I'm free from my own physical body, which is gross, bound here to this earthly realm. But my thoughts and my feelings are contained within this light, this energy that I am. I am peace. I am free from not only the noise around me, but peace, as in free from conflict, conflict of interests. Peace means harmony between my mind and my body. And I can feel this even now. Peace means harmony between my words and my actions. They are the same. And this brings a great sense of fulfillment. I begin to see the beauty that lies inside myself. Irrespective of anything outside, I see the power that lies in my thoughts and my feelings. My thoughts create my vibrations, and my vibrations create an atmosphere. And I feel the atmosphere in this room generated of understanding and oneness. Begin to experience love. Love as in self-acceptance. Doesn't matter what has been up until now. But now I see the potential of who I am and what I am. Whatever is there that needs to be changed, I'm prepared to do that. Because I see the love, the peace, the depth, and the beauty of all of this makes me who I am. And it's this that really and truly connects me with others. Not what my appearance is like, not what I dress like, not who I have with me, not which place I live in, but my qualities. And this is what I need to re-emerge. If I want to be free, one of the things I have to learn to do is to let go. Let go of everything that happens at every moment in life. The habit of holding on to situations and people actually creates limitations and binds us. A few years ago, I was in a conversation with someone. In fact, it was the additional administrative head of the Brahma Kumaris, Dadi Prakashmani. Some of you may have met her. She runs the organization that has 5,000 centers around the world and 500,000 students around the world, and constantly finds herself in front of people so much that it's incredible to just think. So I said to her one day, how do you do it? How do you have so many people coming in front of you? You know that they've done so much and how they've behaved. And yet when they come in front of you, you are just as if nothing has happened. And she said a very simple thing, but a very beautiful thing. And she said, every moment that passes, I say, what is next? Every moment that has finished is gone. It's finished. It's not going to come back. If we hold on to these moments, then we actually build very false relationships with people. You see someone, you meet someone, you share a few precious moments with them, and that's wonderful. And then what happens? You try to recreate those moments again and again. Each time you meet them, you try to recreate that moment, and actually becomes the basis of your relationship with that person. That moment might have been a precious moment, but it was then. But each time you try to do that again and again, it doesn't mean that you've recreated, you just have the memory of that. And because of that memory, you try to build a relationship on the basis of that. And so the foundation of our relationships is very weak. But if you think about it like this, we shared a precious moment together. It was great. Gone, finished. Somebody else comes in front of me, and if I'm open and I've let go of everything that happens, then each moment, each interaction, each relationship actually can become very precious and very beautiful. But if I'm trying to relive with one individual at one moment in time, again and again, I find myself in a huge tie or bondage. Because it's not possible. It's possible for it to get better, not just worse, but it's possible for it to get better even. But I think that that is the ultimate, and so I try to live that. My thoughts are on that, my time is on that, my energy I give to that. But you know what they say about angels? Angels come, they do their work, and they're gone. Nobody sees them. What you see is the work that they've done. They've left no trace of themselves behind. And what are angels made of? We think of angels as wings, with wings. But it's not that they have wings. You are an angel. You are, when you are in your form of light, as in not holding on to anything physical, when you start to work with your thoughts and your feelings, you become an angel. When you start to work with your thoughts and your feelings, you have no ties to one individual, but you actually have ties to many individuals. And you make a contribution and you become connected with many without them knowing. And that is actually a very, very special and a unique experience. And when we learn to create ourselves, create our life in that way, then we start to work with more subtle things in life. We start to work with our thoughts, our feelings, and light. Light travels the fastest. If you're in your physical costume, you can't fly. And interesting that freedom is associated with flying, but it's not physical flying. It's flying here, moving from one thing to the next at every moment it passes by, so that you can actually enjoy every moment in life. But one other aspect that I would like to bring into this, and that is the whole idea of a relationship with God. If I truly want to be free from human beings, from this world, these limitations, then I need to build a relationship with God. And being free doesn't mean rejecting, doesn't mean denying, doesn't mean suppressing, doesn't mean avoiding. In fact, I love the challenge of interacting with people so closely that we work together of cleansing our relationships with each other and bring it to that pure state where we are able to just share, give and take without being tied to each other. We go through the process of learning to accept each other to such an extent that whatever you are is fine. Whatever I am is fine. And when there is that acceptance, then we can move from it. We can change it. We can help. But when there isn't that acceptance, when I want someone to be something that they're not, it's the biggest bondage, biggest tie. And let's face it, we all do it. We always want everybody else to be the way we want them to be, but we don't want to be the way they want us to be, right? No. But I don't have to be how anybody wants me to be. Nobody has to be the way I want them to be. And that's the beauty of life. That's the challenge of working with others to such an extent that we really begin to celebrate our differences. We begin to celebrate each other's company, in each other's company. And so, if I want to enjoy human relationships in that way, I need to build a very strong and a powerful relationship with God. And it's a very beautiful experience. When you start to build a relationship with God, then you start to build a relationship with a perfect being. A being who is always prepared to give, a being who is absolute love, a being who is absolute peace, a being who is absolute truth. And that being is there for you entirely. And when you start to experience God's qualities in that way, you start to develop them in yourself. Develop means that you start to re-emerge those qualities inside yourself. They're there in you too. And the human beings somehow at this point in time bring out the worst in us, whereas God brings out the best in us. In such a way that you start to recognize the original and eternal connection with each other, beyond the limitation of this life, beyond the limitation of this form, beyond the limitation of this character, if you like. It's as if you start to experience love, mercy, compassion that you experience from God through acceptance of yourself, you are then willing to give to others. And there's one thing I realized in my spiritual journey, and that is that everyone is in a state of need right now. Every human being is in a state of need. And therefore, nobody can meet my need. Today they might be able to meet my need, but tomorrow I have another need, a different need, and they can't meet that need. So I look for someone else. And then I discovered another need, and they can't meet that need, so I look for someone else. And that's why we constantly change from one relationship to another. And therefore, I have to be the one who has to learn to give. That's it. And I can only give when I take from God. If I take from human beings, I can't give. So I know that we're running out of time. There's no clock handy, but I think Robert's trying to tell me something. Oh, well. Well, there's got to be something interesting, isn't there? Never mind. So anyway, I'll stop here. I thought Robert was trying to tell me that I was talking too long and that I should stop. But I'll stop anyway. If any of you would like to ask something or maybe share an experience or comment. Make sense what I said? Helpful? I understand what you're saying very much, but I think if you learn a little bit more here, then you'll find out what I mean. But when I'm talking about God, yes, I am talking about God from outside. But having said that, that also only comes when I experience love inside my own self. It's not in a state of neediness, not in a state of reverence that I look up to God, someone outside of me, but I recognize that love is a state that I have to arrive at to a certain degree within my own self. And then I start to experience the power of God, God's love, which is very different. Because for me, the belief definitely that God is outside of me. And I feel it's important to recognize that too, because then I separate myself from what I see around here, the limitations and the negativities, and I make myself separate from it so that I can make a connection with God. But if I'm just seeing God here, everywhere around me, then I'm not giving myself the space and the opportunity to be free so that I can come back to it and deal with it. I mix up the good and the bad and the negative and the positive and everything else. And so for me, it's very important for me to say, okay, this is how it is, but I need to separate from it, then take from God and then come back to it. Come back to it to do something about it. Come back to it to deal with it instead of mixing the two. Do you know what I'm saying? And so it's been a very important exercise to help me understand myself, help me, the world around me, help me to understand another realm, a higher realm, which is also my home, which is also my place, and that I have to reach to it, I reach out to it again. And in order to do that, I do need to make a certain amount of preparations for myself. It's not going to just happen and say, let it come, because we've come so far away from it. But I understand what you're saying. And yes, it is possible to work like that, to have to work on yourself and then experience God in that way too.
At least that's what I experienced.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult for me to seek God creation in this system from now, when I'm brought up in, and that's this country. Very difficult for me to seek God creation. Mm-hmm. I experienced it the first time for real, and that is without thinking. It was exactly, I had no thought of nothing, but I felt it coming from inside, because I was part of the universe, part of all this, and that was enough.
Yeah, which is true. We are part of this, and this is, in a sense, our creation too, because we've made the world the way it is. And so for, we also have to do something about making it the way it should be.
And the feeling of being a part of it was very strong, that God was inside of me, came from inside of me, and very strong that I was a part of it.
Yes, you can work like that also. Anyone else? Gentleman here, put his hand up.
Yes, something that's bothering me a lot about God. My Christian friends, they tell me that there will come a day where God will make an end of this world and, you know, take the sinners to hell and the rest to heaven. What am I supposed to believe? It scares me a whole lot what they're telling me.
My experience of God is that God is a very loving, soft, gentle, pure energy. And when I invoke that presence, then actually I also start to become like that. When I invoke God's presence and God's energy, then I create perfection around me. I create synchronicity around me. Everything just falls into place. And for me, that's what God is. And what also comes with that is the finishing of everything that is not like that.
Including us.
Sorry?
Including each of us. You say that will come then to what is not perfect. Does that include me, for example?
You always exist. You never come to an end, because you are a spiritual being like God. You're, you, you, That's very good. It's halfway there to changing it. But you haven't always been a sinner, and you won't always be a sinner, because the fact that you're here tonight, for instance, means that there is also a part of you that is positive and that is pure. And all you have to do is to focus on that, concentrate on that, and then the transformation comes automatically. God doesn't destroy anyone, doesn't destroy you, me, this world, nobody. God actually comes in front of us to give us a vision of who we are today and what we can be tomorrow. That's all. And that's my experience of God. And that's why I choose to connect with God, to do both, to see what I need to change in myself, and also to be empowered to go where I have to go. God doesn't destroy anyone. God is not that big bearded man up there in the sky who's going to whip us and fry us in oil when it's time to go to hell. I don't think so. Hell and heaven exist in here, exist around me. When I'm thinking negatively, when I'm thinking, but then I feel myself surrounded by negativity. There's no other hell. There is no other heaven, except the heaven that we will create, or we create through our own qualities. And I feel that we will create it. And we will do that with the help of God, not by destroying, but transforming. The lady over there had put her hand up first. No, it's not like that at all. You let go of the external situation, external happenings, but that's where you really connect with the person, actually. When you let go of the superficial things, then the connection of a friendship really begins. It's not based on what you see physically. It's not based on what you did together, but because you have a spiritual bond together, that your friendship is there. It's not because of what somebody is and what they do and what they say. All of that is only temporary. But your relationship, your friendship with somebody is irrespective of what they are externally. Yeah, we get to know each other, we get to understand each other, but it's not a question of the situation itself, it's the feeling behind it that you hold on to, not the situations. And positive things are always good to remember, but not to live in the things of the past, so that you don't create something more and something better. Even positive things, you can make it better, you can create even more. Negative, definitely you have to just let go of, because you just become weakened by it. But positive thing also, to let go of, to move on, to progress from that.
Well, connecting with God and becoming close to God, one way would be meditation. Are there some other ways of connecting with your daily life?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. How are we doing for time? We're not doing too bad. Yes, definitely. Other ways of connecting with God is through prayers, of course. Other ways is through simply positive thinking, good thinking. Other ways is to develop values and virtues in my life. Other ways is to, and in a sense, I suppose that encompasses everything. When you start to live with values, when you start to live with virtues, then your basis of a connection with God is on that level too. And to make God a very real experience, it's not someone up there. Here, I can have a friendship with God. I can have any relationship I want with God. And it's really through silence. I connect with God through silence. I connect with God through performing positive actions. good actions, performing acts of charity. And now, when I say acts of charity, I don't mean making donation of money as charity. That's really another superficial way. But an acts of charity, you know, there's a difference between charity and donation. Donation is to give someone money that you have and, you know, make a difference in that way. Charity is to give someone something when they need it, when the way they need it. I'm prepared to make a sacrifice for my own self and give someone what they need. That's an act of charity. So you can imagine when that kind of acts are being performed, then there has to be the presence of God, because, you know, your connection with others is of comfort and love, and that automatically helps me connect with God. And yes, meditation, intense meditation, deep meditation, and deep means over a long period of time, consistent meditation, so that you are allowing your relationship to grow. And the other thing is that, you know, not to see just God as someone up there and me down here and just reverence for God, but the fact that I'm the child of God. I am a child of God, and therefore my qualities are like those of God's. And in that way, you know, a father and child don't need to work at building a relationship with each other. And a father is always a father, and a child is always the child, a mother and child. It doesn't have, if you know, you don't want God to be the father, that's okay. God can be the mother, your friend, your companion, whatever you want God to be. He's not he or she, he's both, he's either, he's neither. Because God is just an energy, the most positive energy. And so we don't even have a physical image of God, but God also, like me, a point of light. But one energy that never changes, always consistent. And therefore, I bring consistency in my life. I bring stability in my life through the connection with God. And that's vital in today's world. If I want to build a relationship with God, I have to bring consistency. I have to bring stability. I have to bring discipline.
Is God without a person or within, or can it just speak like that?
I feel, and I think the lady was saying, as she was saying, I feel that God is a separate entity from me, but I feel that I can invoke God's presence at any time, whenever I want. And but I also feel that I am like God. That is, I have qualities that God has too. It's just that I've forgotten them now. And that by making a connection with God, I can re-emerge those qualities inside of me. And I feel it's like saying, you know, an artist is the painting. The artist creates the painting. And in every painting, you will see a part of that artist. You see a group of painting, and you will know who the artist is because of what he creates. And in a sense, my own personal feeling is that God is a separate entity from me, and it's important for me to separate the two, and so that I can truly take from God, and ultimately God makes me free from him too. No human being will do that for you. Human beings will give you, take from you, to hold on to you, whereas God will give you, free you, to be free from him too, so that you become yourself in your right. The lady over there, she had put her hand up, yeah.
When you said we are angels, you know, people also talk about guardian angels. So when you say we are between us, guardian angels?
We all have special connections with many others. And it could be a conscious thing or an unconscious thing. And when we keep ourselves open, I feel that we can become instruments to help others particularly. And that's what we have to do. We have to become instruments. And for that, we have to make preparations. And for that, we need to have connection with God to become such instruments. And yes, as an instrument, I can help anyone in need. And yes, there are perhaps souls with whom we do have a connection, perhaps that I don't know consciously today, but in the past or in the future. And so yes, we can help souls when they're in need, providing we have made preparations for ourselves to become those instruments first. The lady over here and the gentleman over there.
I think it can have to do with that we have these images of many people, anyways, all over the world have these images of God as a person with five things. Because, like, for instance, you now write, said, him. You talk about God as him. I think it has a lot to do with our language. With
yes, absolutely.
And habits.
Yes.
My question is then, when you see throughout evolution, when you read the big books, which are almost all of them, they are all of them written by men, for men, of men, and so on and so forth. How? My question is, how can you as a, we as human beings and as women continue to go into that kind of worshipfulness of the picture God as a man?
I understand what you're saying completely, and I don't really have an image of God as a man. I suppose it's just language, as you say, that I say he, but I've experienced God in many beautiful forms, he, she, it, energy, whatever you like. Let me tell you something, and that is that Brahma Kumari's organization was founded by a man. He was 60 years of age, and he had a series of visions. And through those series of visions, he came to understand himself, came to understand the world around him. But there's one aspect that is very unique about the Brahma Kumaris. And Brahma Baba, the founder of the organization, he wasn't a guru then, and he isn't a guru today. He passed away in 1969, having attained his higher, reached his higher self. One thing he said, and this was an inspiration to him from God, that women would be the ones who would become spiritual teachers and leaders. He made a stance to the world in 1937 to say that women will be the leaders, because in India particularly, but world at large, women played very much a secondary role in our communities, no matter where we came from. But he felt that women had the ability to nurture, women had the ability to sustain, women had the ability of self-sacrifice because of their quality of motherhood and their qualities of sharing and giving. So he made a stance at that time. And today, in the organization, and as part of the constitution of the organization, it says that women will always be in the organization, will be the administrative heads of the organization. But having said that, we're not a feminist organization, because there is very much the recognition that there has to be balance in our personality. We, you know, everybody is in a need, as I said earlier on. As women, we have to balance our personality. We have weaknesses too. We have strengths, but we have weaknesses too, of attachment and possessiveness and subservience. That's our weakness. It's not that men have made us subservient. We allowed ourselves to become like that. Equally, men have the quality of clarity and focus and power and need to balance their personality with this softness and gentleness and love. This was recognized by Brahma Baba then, And today it is recognized that our goal is to reach to the, and together we have to work, men and women, we have to work together to reach our goal. And this is the goal of the Brahma Kumaris, the purpose of the organization, to create a balance within our personality individually and to help each other do that. And so it's not that we have a figure of God as a man, and it's not helpful to anybody. And so, but God is an energy, a living, thinking, conscient being. I'm not a woman either. I happen to be in a woman's costume right now, but I am a soul without gender and energy, light, love, peace. And no matter what costume you might be wearing today, all of us are like that. No matter which culture, religion we come from, the tear of our blood, the color of our blood is the same as the color of our tears. And so we have to go beyond these limitations that we've created. Men are like this, women are like this. This is what happened in the past, this is what happened then. What is happening today? And what am I doing today? What am I doing today? Not what other people did, what are other people doing, but what am I doing today? Very good question. You tell me, who created the world the way it is? You and me and everybody else. God didn't create the world like this. We made the world the way it is. And therefore, we are the ones who are going to have to change it too. And we mustn't stop to look what other people are doing. But I have to start doing something about it. The world has become negative. Technology, science, ozone layer. Who created it? Whose greed is it that has created the ozone layer? Whose greed and possessiveness and anger is destroying the world today? Yours and mine and everybody else's. It's not God. God doesn't control anyone and doesn't control anything. God just is. And it's up to me to go to God, to take power from God, to be able to do something about myself and to be able to do something about the world. I think we're running out of time. One last question maybe. Yes, in India we have a story, and the story goes very like this, that there were 5 Pandavas, 5 brothers, and 100 Kauravas. And those of you who've read the Gita will know about this, and the war takes place between the 5 Pandavas and 100 Kauravas. The 100 Kauravas had the armies of the world, the weapons of the world, they had the talent of the world, they had everything. And the 5 Pandavas had only God as their guide. Who do you think won the war? Not the Kauravas. Not the ones who had the armies of the world and the weapons of the world. It was the Pandavas, because they had the guidance of God at every step. And don't look at what they're doing politically and economically. If people in this room now were to start working on a spiritual level, just the people in this room, the whole of Denmark would change. That's it. And why they say 5 and 100 is because 5% of the population started to work on a spiritual level, the whole world would change. Not in a compromising way, not when it's convenient for me and as much as it's convenient for me, but in an absolute way, in the ultimate way, then we will change the world. And we are getting there. We will get there. Because there is nothing else. You can't do anything physically. You can only do so much physically. But spiritually, your mind, your heart, your everything can work towards it. And when you make your mind like that, why God is one being, yet people all over the world remember God, think of God, turn to God. Why? Because things happen. There has to be conquest of positivity over negativity. And so we must look at only that and nothing else. If we look at anything else, they say, those of you who are from business world probably know, wherever it is that your attention goes, energy flows in that direction, and then growth takes place. If you focus on negativity, then you will become negative. If you focus on positivity, you will become positive and you will create positivity. And you have to work with that conviction, no matter what others say, no matter what others do. And you work like that, you start to see the results. Thank you. You've been great sports. Thank you for a very stimulating discussion. I think we should finish with a meditation, right? So I will stand for this again. I thought I would sit down, but I will stand and then we will finish with... Sonia, you want to say something first? You're going to introduce yourself to who you are, right? Yes, you should. Yes.
I'm Sonia. I'm part of the team from Brahma Kumaris here in Copenhagen. So we are a handful of teachers who give course in meditation and positive thinking and all sorts of exciting things. Our center is just around the corner, actually. But the information about that is on your seat or at the back. Manda will guide a meditation. And then afterwards, we have a little card here for you. I hope it's enough for everyone. And that's just written a quality on it. It's a positive quality, a suggestion what you can work with to become an angel, perhaps. So you're most welcome to come and get one of these cards from Manda afterwards. So enjoy the meditation and I might see you.
Actually, Sonia is being very humble. Sonia is in charge of the activities of the Brahma Kumaris here in Denmark. And actually, they're only a team of a handful of people that work. So all of you have to help them. If you want to bring about the changes that you've been talking about, then you've got to help them. And so there's how many of them? Only about 5 or 6 that are regulars. But there's a whole other group that helps. So you've got to become part of that team. First of all, to work on your own self, and then to help others. And life is nothing unless you can do something for someone, unless you can make a difference in somebody's life. When I started thinking about these things 21 years ago, the only thing that really, you know, out of all the teachings that I heard about the Brahma Kumaris, soul, God, time, everything else, one thing that helped me to make a decision, and that was that people are in need, and that a time will come when people won't even be able to go to God. They're going to need someone, and we have to be the ones who help each other. But first of all, I have to have something to give. And it's nothing physical. It's not your money. It's not anything else. It's not your house. It's not your cars. It's not anything. It's not your high-powered jobs that's going to help anyone. It's only going to be what you have filled inside your soul. And so I realized that I've got to do something about it. I was 21 at the time. And so our lives is only worth living when we can do something to help others, when we can do something to make a difference in the lives of others. So you're all needed very much. Om Shanti.